You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinions of anyone at KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today will be a short show. I got notice only about an hour ago that our audio engineer has to leave at 4:30, and my show usually starts at 4, so it'll be a 30-minute show. And I have some very, very good news. Congress is going to be on recess for 5 whole weeks. The country will be safe again from the meddlers in Washington, the interveners, the people that can't mind their own business and want to intervene or interfere in your business will be going home. Now, I don't think they're going to be happy when they have to face their constituents in their town hall meetings. Now, usually what happens during this 5 weeks, many of them go on vacation, and I think people should go on vacation if they've earned it. Some will say they haven't. Some will say they have, but okay, give them 2 weeks vacation. Then they have three weeks to face the American people across this country, and the American people are quite upset. There are a number of issues that they're going to really hammer their representatives and senators. I think Obamacare, while it hasn't been in the news much lately, is still going to be a major issue come November 4th. And remember, these congressmen, after they've completed their vacation and recharged their batteries, are running for re-election in the House. Every 2 years they have to run, so they'll be doing a lot of campaigning and hopefully some listening. And you have to ask your congressmen questions. You have to go to their meetings. You have to ask the questions. You got to get involved. If it's no good you sitting home complaining about Obamacare, illegal aliens or illegal immigration, the job situation or the economy, you have to confront and make known your views to your representatives and your senators. They need the feedback, so give them the feedback. If you're happy with them, fine. If you're not happy with them, tell them why you're unhappy. Now, what some representatives and senators are doing, I think they're foolish to do this, but some are making it increasingly difficult for you to do that. They'll have, instead of a face-to-face meeting, and I think face-to-face meetings are the best, you don't get the body language when it's a teleconference or a web-type town meeting. And usually, if it's over the web, and that's what they're doing, some of them are doing this not face-to-face and avoiding having to face their constituents, will have either a webinar or a telephone-type conference. And the problem there is the questions have to be screened because you're going to have too many questions. You're always going to have people that want to ask questions, and not everyone is going to get an opportunity to ask their questions. But when it's over the internet, you have people that will screen the questions, and the ones they want to answer and that they prepare to answer, they'll answer, and the ones that they don't want to answer, they won't address. That's one problem. Another problem is they schedule these meetings somewhat at short notice. Now, I don't want to paint with a broad brush everybody. At one time, it was expected of both senators and representatives to have one or more meetings in their district and open it up for everyone that wanted to attend. And the congressmen and senators wanted that, and so did the people. However, increasingly, you have our representatives and senators, especially those that have been there a long time, think they're immune to not having to face their constituents. They think they have a sure thing. and they take their voters for granted. And today's the last day of Eric Cantor. He's sort of one that did that exactly that. And he lost really a very, very safe seat, or at least he thought it was a very safe seat. And I like the phrase or saying in Texas, always dance with the one that brought you. And they don't do that. They get some power, whether it's a committee chair or subcommittee chair, or in Eric Cantor's case, he was the majority leader, the Republican majority leader, and suddenly you have a lot of people courting him in terms of special interest. In this case, it was the U.S. Chamber of Commerce as well as other pro-open borders, and he was talking out of both sides of his mouth, and now he did not win his primary and will be out of office come January. You can't do that. You know, see, that's the danger of the so-called incumbent advantage. The incumbents know that the probability of them being reelected is somewhere between 90 and 100%. In other words, it's almost certain. Why? They have the advantage of money. They've done it before. They've have a machine, if you will. They have an organization set up. They have money in an organization. And some of them are very, very good in terms of servicing their constituency and have a good staff. But what happens is, and it takes a little time, not a lot of time, but within 1 or 2 years, some situations a little bit longer, they increasingly have views that don't represent the majority views of their constituents. And when that gap becomes too wide, then you get exactly what happened to Eric Cantor when he ran in the primaries. And it's going to happen to people both in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Both parties are guilty of this. It's not listening to what the American people are concerned about. I'll tell you what the Americans are concerned about most of all, and that is jobs. If they have a job, they're worried about keeping it. If they don't have a job, they're looking for either a part-time or full-time, and they're also worried about their own children or grandchildren that have little or no job experience finding their first job. So jobs and the economy will be the number one issue, bar none. But there are two related issues that are not the number one issue that have an impact on jobs. What are they? One is Obamacare. Because if you're an individual, you already know this. Many individuals that don't have coverage where they work have to go out and buy it. And most responsible people do that. And what they've already experienced is a dramatic increase in the premiums as well as the deductibles for the so-called Obamacare, these metal plans, these platinum, gold, silver, and bronze. And they really have had sticker shock, and they want Obamacare repealed. And that's one question you need to address your representatives and senators. Are you in favor of Obamacare being repealed in its entirety? And see what their answer is. And if you have complaints about what you bought, make it known. The recurring theme that I hear from people that have bought these so-called metallic plans, whether they get a subsidy or not, especially if they've already had a plan to compare it with, the premiums are much higher, 50 to 100% or more higher, and the deductibles are anywhere from 3 to 5 times higher. And to add insult to injury, most of the networks that they can go in terms of doctors don't include the doctor that has been treating them for many, many years. And then the hospital that they prefer to go is not in the network. So they feel that President Obama definitely lied to them that when he said, you can keep your own plan. Well, they couldn't keep their own plan. They couldn't keep their own doctor. And it's costing them not $2,500 less if you're a family of four, but more like $3,000 to $5,000 more for a family. So you have a lot of voters, both Democrat and Republicans, that are really upset with the Democratic Party about Obamacare. Now, one of the things that President Obama is guilty of is delaying the real impact of Obamacare until he's out of office by exempting or delaying the effective dates. And that needs to be kept in mind because most people, over 155 million, and I really think the number is a little bit higher than that. I think it's close to 160 to 170 million. I don't know the exact number, but whatever the number is, it's a lot of people. More than half the people that have health insurance get it through their employer. Now, the thing to keep in mind, you have employers tend to be broken down into categories. You have your very small businesses under 10. They usually buy what's called small group health insurance. Then you have under 50. And again, they tend to buy group insurance. Some of them self-insure. And then the very large companies self-insure but use various insurance companies to actually administer the plan. The vast, in terms of numbers of plans as well as employees, it's that under 50 group that is going to be impacted once the full implementation of Obamacare takes place. I was in the group health insurance business, and every year, the employer would get a renewal notice telling him how much his premiums have gone up. Seldom did they go down. Occasionally, they did. But the general trend was upwards. And what I would have to do if the premium increase was too big was to shop it for him. Well, once Obamacare gets implemented, while the impact will not be as great on groups as it is for individuals, there's still going to be a significant increase. It's not going to be a wash. And because of that, and the reason is this, you have to have, they have 10 new, well, not new, they have 10 categories of benefits. Some plans have many, not all, but many of those benefits. So to the extent that you already have those benefits in your plan, you're not going to see a significant impact in terms of the premium. But many other plans simply don't have many of those benefits. And because of that, this mandating of, it's really the government saying, designing and saying, you will have these benefits in your plans no matter what. And what I mean by no matter what, for, you know, take for, I'm not in the market, but if I were in the market, I would not want maternity coverage. I don't need it. I don't want child care. I don't need it, but it's in the plan. And that's the problem. I would be paying for things I simply won't be using. And in other words, it cannot be tailored to meet my needs. And it's not just me, it's millions of Americans. So Obamacare will be definitely an election issue. And if you're not happy with your either your current plan or you're worried about the premiums and the deductibles, you need to grill your congressmen and senators, whether you're a Democrat or Republican. Make your views known. And if you disagree with me, fine. If you think Obamacare is terrific, fine. I don't. Because what's happening is, especially young people are forced to buy insurance. Many of them can't many of them don't have jobs. Many of them can't afford it. I know you're quickly going to say, well, they qualify for Medicaid. If they're totally destitute and not working, they qualify for Medicaid. That's true. But go try to find a specialist or an outstanding practitioner to provide you medical service. Most specialists are too busy. They have paying customers, so they're not taking Medicaid patients. See, that's another scandal. You hear, oh, you qualify for Medicaid. Well, that's great. But if you can't find a doctor to treat you in a timely fashion, and the quality of care is not that, it's not the best. I'm not saying it's bad. Then you got a problem, and you're going to have to look for a doctor, especially if you have a condition that requires you to see a specialist, because most specialists don't take Medicaid. General practitioners will, but not all of them. Because many that have built up a practice don't need to. You know, there's only so many hours in a day, and that's what you got to keep in mind. Now, the other thing to keep in mind, many doctors saw this coming and decided to retire. Many doctors left the medical profession because they said enough is enough. I have enough money to retire. I'm comfortable. I'm not going to put up with the government telling me how I have to run my practice. So I believe Obamacare will be, most definitely, will be an election issue. And like I say, what you need to do, if you have any complaints, suggestions, ask them. Also ask the Republicans this. Okay, I agree with you. We need to replace Obamacare. But what are you going to do as a substitute? In other words, what's your plan? Because there are a lot of things that can be improved in the healthcare delivery process and to keep costs down. One of it is universal tort reform. Texas is, if you're in Texas, you're very fortunate. We had that several years ago. And that's why doctors are coming to Texas and fleeing other states where you don't have this. because one of the biggest costs of any medical practice is malpractice insurance. And to the extent that anyone can sue, you have a right to sue. But here's the problem. To the extent that the jury awards outrageous awards to the people that were damaged, that increases the cost of insurance, which is increases the cost that you have to pay when you go to the doctor. So you need tort reform. You need to put limits on what people can recover if they're truly damaged. Now, you have the bar, or really the litigators, the trial lawyers, that are against that. So if you're in one of these states that where that is a problem, you need to get out and ask the question. Are you going to be pushing tort reform? See, that's the one thing that Obama and the Democrats would not touch. It was an obvious low-hanging fruit or something that should have been addressed. It wasn't addressed. So I'm spending a lot of time on Obamacare because it impacts your wallet. You're going to be paying for this one way or the other. And it also impacts job availability because what employers are doing, many jobs that used to be full-time today are not. They're part-time. There's a reason for that. If you work less than 30 hours a week, they don't have to provide you with health insurance. So what many employers are doing is reclassifying jobs as to part-time. And as far as new hires, most of them, not all of them, but most of them will be part-timers. So what that forces people to do is to take two or more jobs. They can't get the hours. We see this right on this college campus. And Richland College is not unique. You might be surprised, depending when you went to school, but today, most classes today in colleges and universities are taught by adjunct faculty, in other words, part-time faculty. And they can't work more than 20 hours a week. That's the maximum. And they enforce it, at least here. Some states, I'm sure it's higher. But that's how the Dallas Community College District makes sure that they can keep the prices down by hiring mostly part-time faculty. Now, I've had some excellent part-time faculty. I had a class today, an outstanding instructor. But he comes from industry. But he's a part-timer, and he wants to work part-time. And that's something to keep in mind. Some of these instructors want part-time. They don't want a full-time job because they either have their own business or they have another full-time job. But there are faculty that would love to be full-time. But it's very, very difficult today, especially at so-called community colleges or junior colleges or two-year colleges, to get a full-time job. They do have some, but that is they're trying to reduce the number of full-time faculty. And it's the same thing as going on at the university level, where actually it's somewhat worse in the sense that they're having graduate students. And when I was going to grad school, I was what's called a TEA, or teaching assistant. I taught sections. Usually the way it works, and it really hasn't changed, you'll have a tenured faculty teach the lecture, and I'm talking a lecture where you'll have several hundred people, 50, 100, 200 on up, depending on the size of the lecture hall, teach that course or provide the lecture, and then you'd have separate sections. And usually a section would be anywhere from 20 to 30 students, in which the teaching assistant would be responsible for answering the students' questions, going over some of the material that might not be cleared, and grading the papers. And they also had what's called, at least at Berkeley, readers, which were graders. They read exams. That's what they did. They read exams. They read papers for the professor. Yeah, the professor would kind of skim them, but generally it was the reader who actually gave the grades to all the students. And the teaching assistants helped with trying to get some understanding of the material into the heads of the undergraduate students. But that trend has not only persisted, it's got a lot of worse, where now some of these courses are taught by the grad students or the part-time faculty. Most are. So what you say, and I don't think this is a good trend, by the way. I'm not in favor of this. I think you need full-time faculty. You need to keep standards up, and you need, you know, I've seen this here. I'm not going to pick on Richland, but I've talked to other faculty members, and they got the same impression. What's going on across the universities is the material is being dumbed down, and that's not good. It's not as rigorous as it used to be. And the reason is you're not hiring full-time faculty. You have part-timers that either have other jobs and don't want to teach full-time. So instead of going to the trouble and expense, and the reason why the trend is this way, they don't have to pay for health insurance and they don't have to pay for retirement. That's why this is strictly a dollars and cents issue. That's what's going on. Because if you hire a full-time faculty, that person is expecting a good health insurance plan as well as a good retirement plan, and the universities and the colleges simply don't want to pay that. I always say you get what you pay for. If you're not willing to pay people a decent salary, guess what? They won't even go into teaching. I initially was going to go into teaching to be from teaching economics. I decided rather early after getting out of the military, forget about it. And I'm glad I made that decision. You know, it's comfortable, but the problem is more and more people are part-time. And that's not the way it used to be. It's not just at the universities. It's across the country. And what's really making this problem worse is Obamacare. So Obamacare and jobs and the economy will be issue number one and two and three. Now, what will be issue number four? And I've been going on this subject and hitting it heavily, and that is immigration, both legal immigration and illegal immigration. And I'm looking at the clock. I only have a couple of minutes, so I'm not going to spend much time on it. But the American people, and this is over many, many years, are totally against illegal immigration. They want the immigration laws in force. Paul after Paul after Paul have said that. I don't think there's a debate here. Oh, yeah, there is a significant minority that doesn't want the laws enforced, and those are primarily employers, again, employers, job-related, that want cheap and compliant labor. Immigration is definitely tied into the job issue. It's also tied into the security issue, and security, I mean, against terrorists, as well as the crime and drugs. So immigration will be an important issue, especially stopping the flood of teenagers trying to get into this country that really was caused by President Obama's so-called the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA, the so-called Dreamers, that gave him a two-year, we won't deport you for 2 years. Now, the law says if you're here illegally, you will be removed and deported. That's the law. And that's what the American people want enforced. So you're going to have to ask your congressmen and senators about that as well. Where do you stand? And don't forget legal immigration. And I almost did. The focus today is on illegal immigration. And ladies and gentlemen, it's not 11 to 12 million. It's really 30 to 50 million or maybe even more. But let me tell you what some of your representatives and senators are trying to do. They're trying to increase the number of legal immigrants, and you might be surprised at that, every year for the last, oh, I think it's going on 20 years, about a million legal immigrants, actually slightly more, come into the country. What they're trying to do is pass in the so-called comprehensive immigration bill, initially increase it to 2 million, and in a couple years down the road, increase it to 3 million. Now, why are they doing it? To make all the illegal aliens here legal. And it's strictly about them getting reelected. Now, why you should be concerned about that, who are they competing for jobs with? You, the American people, people born here. The American people were not demanding that the number of legal immigrants be a million. And they're certainly not demanding 2 or 3 million. But again, there are employers, businesses that are. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is probably the biggest organization that's guilty of this. Now, as I speak, they're trying to pass some type of bill in Congress. I don't think it's going to get through. To stop, the House at least was trying to get a vote scheduled to amend the so-called William Wilberforce Human Trafficking Act that requires if someone is from a country other than Canada or Mexico, in other words, they're a child, someone under 18 is from a country such as Central America, Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador. They can't be immediately sent back like you can with Mexicans or Canadians. And they're trying to get that amendment through, and the Democrats are fighting them. They're trying in the Senate to squeeze in a comprehensive immigration bill, and John Boehner, to his credit, said no. The only thing we'll consider is legislation that will deal with the so-called humanitarian crisis caused by President Obama on the border. The president is talking in both sides of his mouth. Initially, he said he favored that, but he hasn't come out and gave a proposal to the House. So we'll see if anything gets passed, but you need to be alert to it. In the next 5 weeks, you have an opportunity to question your representatives in Congress at district meetings, as well as your senators, and ask the questions. Come prepared. Investigate whatever you're concerned is. Do your homework. Come with a prepared question and be prepared to have a follow-up question. Because a lot of times, they have answers prepared. They're not expecting people to be informed on it. So they can BS you. But you need to ask the tough questions. Don't feel shy, because let me tell you, the question you're asking, there are dozens, if not hundreds of or thousands of people in your district that aren't there that would like it to be asked. So I encourage all American citizens to take this opportunity over the next 5 weeks to address questions to your congressmen and senators. I'm looking at the time, and I'm totally out of time. So let me play my closing music. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinions of anyone at KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. Have a great week. We have only one more week to the end of the semester. So study for your exams, finish those papers. If you're in multimedia, finish those projects, because you only have a week to get it done. Good luck. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.